Clearly a multi-talented assortment of human beings. But what of the non-human beings? Stephen Moore, a perfectly respectable actor, found himself auditioning not for the Bard's rude mechanicals, but for an altogether more challenging role, the guide's melancholy mechanoid, Marvin.
I think you ought to know I'm feeling very depressed.
I remember going to the recording and some of the other actors in the show saying, is it true we've got Stephen Moore coming? Is Stephen Moore? I'm going to be acting with Stephen Moore. And I said, yeah, I think that's his name, yes. And Stephen is and was, you know, a highly significant and important actor at the National Theatre and the Royal Shakespeare Company and so on. So suddenly realising that this is a man of great stature, I was slightly nervous then about having asked him to come and be in this piddling little radio show and play a robot.
I just got a message like you do from your agent saying, do you want to do this radio? They don't seem to have a script, but would you go along and meet them in the Paris studio, which I did. And they didn't have a script, and I was handed bits of paper, and they said, read this, you know, he's depressed, he's a manic depressive, and he's a robot, and he's a bit like Eeyore.
I'm not getting you down at all, am I?
No, no, Marvin. That's just fine, really.
I wouldn't like to think I was getting you down.
No, don't worry about that. You just act as comes naturally and everything will be fine.
You're sure you don't mind?
No, no, it's all just part of life.
Life? Don't talk to me about life.
As well as pushing back the frontiers of casting, Jeffrey Perkins was rather startled to discover that he had also unwittingly created an entirely new mode of performing, recording each character in solitary confinement, then doctoring them electronically, to produce out of thin air the vast array of supersonic voices sought after by Douglas. Clever stuff. And many of those listening experienced great satisfaction, but it wasn't always easy to work out who was saying what. To avoid further confusion, then, the following two speakers are quite definitely Mr. Jeffrey Perkins and Mr. Douglas Adams.
I think we pioneered a method of actors acting without ever meeting each other. I remember somebody coming down, I think it was when somebody did a documentary on the programme, and they came down when we were recording something, and there was nobody on the stage at all. But there were about voices coming from all over the place, and we had people in different sort of rooms all around the Paris studios just to keep the voice separation.
So somebody would be in the microphone cupboard, somebody else would be in the narrator's booth, somebody else would be in the loo, all mic'd up, so their voices were completely separate from each other and could go on to separate tracks of the tape. And so Stephen, playing Marvin, whose voice always had to be treated, was regularly locked in the microphone cupboard. And there was one terrible day when we did a Marvin scene right at the beginning of the recording, and Stephen went off, duly sat in his cupboard. And then we went on, did this, that and the other, and various other scenes. And really, it was sort of, it was about lunchtime, and somebody sort of said, has anybody seen Stephen?
Not a naturally tenable position for a National Theatre player, but Stephen Moore wasn't the only one to be left more than a little paranoid. Several unwary guest stars also proved inexplicably determined to make a fool of themselves in public. But those who ventured too far into Douglas's orbit risked personality problems far beyond the dreams of analysts.
Ladies and gentlemen, friends, welcome to the restaurant at the end of the universe. I am your host for tonight, Max Quartalplein, and I've just come straight from the very, very, very other end of time, where I've been hosting a show with the Big Bang Burger Chef.
We have Roy Hudd in it, playing this compere at the restaurant at the end of the universe. And Roy had a whole script to do, just did it. We recorded him completely on his own. He recorded all his bits as one long monologue, and then I got him to busk about another 5-10 minutes, which ended up in Roy lying on the floor of the Paris studio, begging to be allowed to stop.
Yeah, it was. Well, thank you, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, take your places at table. The candles are lit, the band is playing, and... What number? Yes, it's down the corridor, the second door.
He then went off to do an interview for World Service for something, and he bumped into Stephen Moore, who was also there doing an interview for World Service. And Roy said, I've just done this really mad show, I don't know what it is. And Stephen just said, yes, I expect that's the thing I'm in. I think there was that general air of, we don't know what this show is.
Oh, no, 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 look, I mean, as soon as you come into this dive, I think you get held in this sort of amazing force-shielded temporal warp thing. Look, look, I'll show you. Now, imagine this napkin, right, as the temporal universe, right? And this spoon as a transductional mode in the matter curve.
But that's the spoon I was eating with.
All right, imagine this spoon as the transductional mode in the matter curve. No, no, better still, this fork.
Hey, could you let go of my fork, please?
Well, look, 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 why don't we say this wine glass is the temporal universe? So if I sort of... Yeah, well, forget that.